Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to this episode number 91 of the Free Cities Podcast. Well, today I have a returning guest for you. The last time I spoke with Ivan Coe was way back in episode number 60, when we spoke about his decision to leave his homeland of Hong Kong and choose to settle in the UK using the new BNO, British Nationals Overseas Visa Programme. Ivan is a real estate development and finance veteran who has more recently turned his hand to the production of 21st century charter cities in his role as the CEO of Victoria Harbour Group. Now, back when I last spoke with Ivan, he was pitching an ambitious project to a council in the southeast of England, a plan which has evolved somewhat since then, and on today's show we go into its new incarnation, a free city project in the newly designated Thames Estuary Freeport area. Now, I won't say too much here in the intro. Ivan will, of course, reveal all. Just listen on. Don't forget, you can contact me at podcast@free-cities.org. I read and answer everything that arrives at that inbox myself. Thanks for your continued support on value for value platforms, particularly the Fountain app, my favourite. And don't forget to join our Telegram group to connect with other Free Cities curious people. Due to its success recently, we've had to split it into a number of sub-channels. Now you can join the general chat, events, or a new section ready to move for all those people actively looking to relocate. Anyway, links in the show notes, of course. And in the meantime, as always, please be my guest and just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Ivan Coe. Right. So, Ivan.
Yes.
Okay.
Tim.
You sent me your, what would you call this, a white paper?
I would call it the narrative of the 21st century free city.
Right. And now we spoke last...
October?
So in
Prague.
Eight months. And reading through this, I must say it's hugely ambitious.
Yes.
I'm impressed now. And it really, like, I had so many questions right from the offset. But do you know what my main question was when I was reading through this about what your plans are and what you're trying to achieve here? Is why did you pick the UK? For this, like, and I'm not trying to be facetious or anything. I'm looking at this thing and I'm thinking, this is so ambitious. This is really impressive. Why pick a country where you probably have one of the most bureaucratic systems? I'm guessing because I live here. I know what the bureaucracy is like. Right, we have a lot of bureaucracy here, and what you're proposing is very, like I say, ambitious. You're talking about having freeport status. You're talking about, a number of things that we can go into.
Yeah.
Which are very ambitious. So why the UK?
Okay. UK is a natural choice for me because the relationship that Hong Kong had with the UK in the past as a colony, and also at the same time, the BNO visa bring a lot of Hong Kong people to the UK. And with a lot of Hong Kong people coming into the UK, right now I think it's close to 200,000. And it will increase in the next few years if Hong Kong situation keeps on like that. So I think this is a very opportune timing for us to do something in the UK. And I can feel that the UK government is kind of a very accommodating and also appreciate us coming into this country. And look, they may look forward to us doing something here meaningfully or kind of contributing to the society or the economy. So I think having my background in the real estate fund management, I think I do have some ideas about how to do it here in the UK. I'm not saying that UK is the only choice, but then UK is a natural choice at this moment. And in the future, if we are successful, we might replicate this or kind of do something similar in other countries like the US or other developing countries.
Like I say,
sorry for sending it to you the last night, and I noticed that you just read it this morning.
No, I mean, it doesn't matter when I read it.
It's heavy, right?
Well, no, it's not heavy. It's just, like I say, it's impressive.
Okay.
Like if this became a reality, I'd be really impressed. And but a lot of that is to do with the fact that you're trying to create something quite substantial in the UK.
Yes.
And I've been a resident of the UK for 52 years. I know
you are still young.
I know what the bureaucratic system here is like. And it's, I mean, really also at the heart of what you're creating is also a special economic zone.
Yes, yes.
And when I think of the process of trying to do that and to create a city of 400,000 people and to create, you know, like there are so many elements to this. I'm impressed that you're thinking this way. Yeah, okay. This is a long-term project.
Yes.
Maybe I should go through just a few of the bullet points you've got down here for your 21st century free city, or maybe, I mean, why don't you explain them? You know, like right at the start here, we've got a sustainable, outward-looking, and global 21st century free city designed around communities, innovation, and enterprise as a pioneering and high-growth area.
Yes.
So something like a special economic zone with a residential component.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Also with a particular ideological slant, the freedom, the families, the community, this kind of stuff.
Yeah. I think ultimate goal is to change it to special economic zone. If it is not a special economic zone, then it can be a new city. A new city where economy and lifestyle are being emphasized. I think in the UK, coming into here after 3 years, I have some observations. First of all, my understanding is the UK has not developed any new city after the Milton Keynes in the 80s. And right now, all we have are just garden village, garden community. And those are purely residential. So I think it's high time that the UK develop this kind of new city. And the new city has to have some new elements, meaning that it has to be forward-looking, it has to be futuristic, and at the same time, kind of help people to match or cater to their lifestyle that they aspire to. And but don't forget economy. Economy is a big thing. And if people can have good work, they have good job and business opportunities, I think that would thrive. And I just feel that the UK need this kind of energetic project, making people improve their living lifestyle and also kind of help the UK have some breakthrough in the economic development. I think that's the whole purpose. So that's why we call it high growth, meaning that we would like to bring in industries which are for the future. No matter they are in the IT, in the hydrogen, or in other area like a construction method or semiconductor, you name it, or for the environmental protection of the earth in the future. So basically, I think we want to have a new city where people feel free and private enterprises also feel free to do whatever they think the future would need, both locally in the UK or globally, and also to help UK to kind of fill up the gap in the global supply chain. Those are very strategic, and it should be moving in that direction. So that's why I propose to have this 21st century free city.
And it's on the coast, right?
Yes.
Because part of it is that it's a port as well.
Yes, yes, yes.
And you've got a location, right?
Yes, yes. In fact, England has already, the central government has approved eight free ports, 8 to 10, I think. And one of the location is in Thames Estuary.
They've pre-approved them.
Yeah.
And is there anything there at the moment?
Well, yes. In fact, the Thames Estuary Freeport, they already have three ports there. One is the DP World, which they call London Gateway. It's in operation. It's a very, very automatic and very... the operation is a very... automatic and also very high end. And the second one is the Tilbury. The third one is the Dagenham, Fort Dagenham. So the three ports together form the Thames Freeport. And we are now in serious discussion with Thames Freeport, the company, to look at how the 21st century free city can be implemented there. And I'm very glad that I have seen the DP World is running very, very smoothly and already got a lot of logistic and also other operations there. And they welcome advanced manufacturings and hydrogen, semiconductor. So all sorts of these high-end and future businesses.
So what does their current status as freeports then mean?
Okay. Well, first of all, being a freeport, that means if your products come into this area and you meant for export after some value-added work to be done on the product, then there's no custom, tariff or tax that you have to pay while in this area. So that means that's the first thing. The second thing is they have some tax incentives, like a relief in the business rates for a few years. And also they have this kind of what we call the other incentive, like the employer's 0% of an employer national insurance contribution for 3 years, and also a 10% per annum enhanced structure and building allowance, and also some 40% of rent equivalent saving for the first 5 years, which is the holiday for the business rate, and also a zero stamp duty and land tax. So those are very attractive. Certainly, it's not comparable to a special economic zone. Special economic zone can have even more incentive for both individuals and also enterprises. But this is already very attractive in that sense.
How long have these free ports on the Thames been around then? When did they get their freeport status?
Well, I think it has the freeport status for maybe 1 or 2 years. Right. It's pretty new because the ports are already there. The three ports are already there. But then they group together and apply for the free port status. So the free port status was granted to them maybe a year and a half ago. And then they started the company to kind of pull together the synergies and then work together to attract enterprises and factories, logistics.
And presumably currently no one's living in these freeport areas are for business only, right?
Yes. Primarily they are just for factories, logistics and transportation businesses. But then near them they have this residential, but not very close, and those residential were pre-exist, so they are not catered to the needs of the these free ports. Yeah,
and your plan would be to build around the port. Is that the idea? Like to there's what is it? What do you call it? Brownfield land?
Oh, okay.
Is it greenfield? Which one is it? I don't know.
Yeah. Good. Let me explain the 21st century free city first. In fact, we want to develop some new cities in the UK. One, maybe two or three. To start with, we require a piece of land which is of the size of at least 8 square kilometers. And all the way, if in the next few decades is successful, it can expand to 100 square kilometer. Milton Keynes is about 98 square kilometer. And the second thing is the population. We can start with maybe bringing in maybe 10,000 or 20,000, 30,000 in the beginning. And then at the end, it can be expand to grow to 200,000 to 400,000. And basically, I think it has to have a free port status. And then at the same time, it would allow the encourage new businesses to come in and be their anchor industries. And at the same time, we can have some residential nearby so as to cater to the accommodation needs of the workers and the management there, so that the workplace and the residence would be quite close to each other, so that the residents and the workers can maintain a work-life balance. And we will also look forward to this new city where we can foster versatile younger generation. I'm adding the word versatile because nowadays with the social media, with the tech industry, with all these different new businesses, younger talents, they have to be good at many things, not just at one thing. Previously, like baby boomers like me, we have to be good at one thing. Either you are engineer or lawyer or doctor, and then you excel in your area or your industry or your field. But then nowadays, they require talents to be very versatile. They have to be good at many things. So I hope this city can foster the versatile younger generation. In saying that, we are looking forward to developing a city which is not a future city. It's not a futuristic city, meaning that future city always we have the impression that strange shape building, very stunning design, and we thought that that's a future city. No, in fact, what I want to do is the city has to be meant for the future of the human being and also for the earth, meaning that every industries here, every businesses here, or people here, they come into this city, they know that this city would work for the future of the human being and also the earth. So everything they do, every product or service they provide would be for the future. For example, future transportation, future education, and also future technology, things for the future. And when we think about the future, then we think about how to improve ourselves, both humanity and also and the environment. So that is more or less what we want to do. And I think UK is very suitable for this kind of new city, because UK has a lot of this kind of commitment. For example, when you develop a new garden city, a garden community, you have to have this increase in biodiversity, and you have the commitment to have a net zero in 2 or 3 decades. So I think the UK is already ready for this kind of new city. The only thing is we have to do it now. Find a place where this concept is being receptive, and at the same time have a kind of partners who can work with us. So I think the choice of Thames Estuary is good because of its proximity to London, and also they have a vast, a very large tract of land available, and many, some of, I would say the majority of those land are undeveloped or can be developed, and also they have a freeport status and already got some operation going on. So I think this is very ideal, and we look forward to this opportunity very much.
So what, so far then, who, you were saying about needing, you know, people to be receptive to this.
Yeah.
So who has been receptive to this so far? Like at what stage is this idea?
Okay. Okay, well, we are now in the discussion stage with the Thames Estuary Growth Board and also the Thames Freeport. And we work very closely with the Thames Freeport. We meet up every week looking at how to start this and how to bring in manufacturers and factories from overseas, like Taiwan, and currently we are talking about bringing in a semiconductor manufacturer together with a semiconductor cluster into the Thames Estuary, into the Freeport, and also looking at other kind of businesses like hydrogen plant, and also the airplane manufacturing. And also the other key industry from Asia, from Taiwan, Japan, and Korea.
And is that part of the Free City plan, or is that just like, let's get some investment for you? Is that like, I don't know.
Well, in fact, this is much bigger than the 21st century new city. And I would say it is a different level of development. For me, my vision is to develop 21st century free city, because I think with a city scale of development, then many things can be implemented. But if it is just a garden village size of development, then we can only talk about those like a family friendliness, neighborliness, and environmental sustainability. It's not at least it missed the economic portion of it.
I mean, when you say you want to bring in companies, mm-hmm. corporations, or whatever. Is the residential part of the Free City plan to do with that?
Yes.
I mean, I've just been speaking to someone from Zaha Hadid Architects prior to this interview.
Uh-huh. And
he said that starting a city from scratch is difficult, but the easiest way to do it is to build a city around an industry or around something like that. It sounds like that's your plan.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, at this time, when we are talking about 21st century free city, we talked to Thames Estuary Growth Board, we talked to Thames Freeport, and both of them are very receptive. And in fact, the Thames Freeport, they want to support this idea, make it successful. And I think what we want to do is find the anchor industry in this area first, create a lot of jobs, and attract a lot of talents into this area, and then the accommodation, the residential would be auxiliary, would be supplementary to the economic development. And so when people come in here, they don't have to worry about no job or no business opportunity. They can just come in here, find their work, and then maybe we build some good schools, and then they can just start right from the beginning.
And it's going to be primarily in the beginning, you think, workers from the corporations and Hong Kongers particularly?
Yeah, Hong Kongers.
Previously, who've emigrated?
Yeah, yes, yes. I would say the majority of the workforce have to come from local.
Hong Kongers or local?
Local.
Whoever.
Whoever. Hong Kong people would, I would treat them, treat ourselves as local because we have already moved in here for the past 2-3 years and many of us decided not to go back to Hong Kong. So I would treat ourselves as local. And at the same time, if we have a semiconductor cluster, a manufacturer coming from the Taiwan, then they will require around, they will create about 10,000 jobs, and 3,500 of them may be at the or would require high technical skills and like engineers and management, and about 3,000 of them have to come from Taiwan, so 7,000 have to be recruited from local. So for the 3,000 Taiwanese employees coming to here, they must be very happy because this is a European country. It has the very deep culture and European culture, and also the UK has its own position in the world, so I think they would like their families to live here, to their children to be brought up here. So basically, we have to provide them with accommodations, so they can either buy properties from us or rent property from us. So we have to build at least maybe 3,000 new homes for just this factory. So imagine if we have other, like a hydrogen plant, AI industry, and also, airplane manufacturing, then each of them, they would have their own residential requirements to be to match with their work population. And then we can help the local people, especially those in the Thames Estuary, that they can have a better job prospect in their future, including training up all the existing workers.
Is your plan to run the city like have a city operator, like a bit like a private city, but or what? I mean, how would it work in that sense?
Well, in fact, I think up to now, after several weeks of communicating and discussion with the Thames, Thames Estuary Growth Board, and also the Thames Freeport, I have initially decided that the area would cover three boroughs. One is the one is the Dagenham, the Barking and Dagenham. The other one is Havering, and the third one is about this Thurrock. So these two, three areas adding together, they have around 336 square kilometer. So big enough. And then the second thing is they already have a population of 636,000. So they have already got a lot of people living there. Spreading out throughout this 336 square kilometer. So we are trying to bring in the major industry, industries that is for the future, and then create a lot of jobs, and then bring in some foreign workers, and then kind of help. Maybe you can say that I have the mission to bring Asia to the UK door, so that UK would be kind of stimulated by these Asian enterprises, manufacturers, industry, and also people, talents, and then we can create a totally very interesting environment. And
because like you're an ex-Hong Konger and everyone that you know who've come, you've come under particular circumstances, let's say, to the UK. Yes. Do you think that's going to have a bearing on the kind of city that you create? I'm assuming it will.
Okay.
I mean, you've because I when you talk about this, so many things spring to mind for me, and one of them is that there will be pushback from what I would call indigenous English people, because I can imagine it immediately. Mm-hmm. They'll be like, oh my God, the Chinese are coming. they're going to establish a, you know, like little Hong Kong it will be, or something won't it? And blah, blah. But probably most of them won't realize that the reason that Hong Kongers have come here is because they're actually fleeing China.
Yes, yes.
And it's ironic.
Yes,
but
they're iron fits. The iron fist.
Yeah, but I think that will probably be somewhat ignored by a lot of English people who will just see, you know. But so I'm asking, I presume that the fact that you're, you know, or not refugees, but you're, you know, like semi-refugees, let's say, that you're going to want to create something that's very dissimilar from China at the moment.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, that's fair to say, is it?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Well, in fact, I would say that if we can have a better kind of communication with the public, I think they would be receptive. But certainly, I would also foresee that some people might have some resistance or kind of reservations, but that is natural. You can't do something new and then everyone claps their hand and welcome you with open arms. That would not be the case. So I think for us, we are not trying just to bring Hong Kong people and Hong Kong businesses. Our aim is to bring Asia. As I said, we would like to bring Taiwan, Korea, Japan, and at least these three countries to the UK, and then work together with us. I treat Hong Kong people coming here as local, so we would be bring these the valuable the things from Asia to the UK, and I think that would be very beneficial. And how are we going to engage the public, and how are we going to carry out this message? I think it's partly our job and partly the government's job, or the Thames Estuary Growth Board or the Thames Report. I would say that we would tailor our public communications in one way or the other to suit as many as possible.
I think it's fair to say that it's not actually that common knowledge that lots of Hong Kongers came to the UK with the visa because they wanted to sort of escape the tyranny that was coming.
Yeah.
I don't think that's common knowledge, really. You'd be surprised. I know that it seems like people should know about this, but I don't think it is that common knowledge to the average person that there was a big exodus of people from Hong Kong recently. Mm-hmm. You know, it certainly will involve a lot of public education, let's say.
Yeah.
Because I think that, like I say, the easy conclusion to draw will be, and you see this with free city projects all around the world, the indigenous population, a section of them always start to think someone's coming to take our land away from us.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. When it, you know, and it happened the other way around in Honduras. Mm-hmm. People say it's, you know, Westerners coming to, you know, even though by law you have to employ more than 90% indigenous people. You know, the people that run it are from Central America. You know, it's so it's a very tricky part of the process, I would say. And maybe that, you know, one of the hardest battles you may have. I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I think we want to make it a public I mean, it's a project for all of us, not to cater to certain people from certain countries or just for Hong Kong. So that's why we have this name, 21st Century Free City, where free means free port, but and also at the same time means freedom to enterprises and to people. And I feel that when over the past 3 years, when I talk to local people here in the UK, I got the impression that many of them, they know what has happened or is happening in Hong Kong. And some of them, interestingly, either their father or themselves have worked in Hong Kong before. So they have some connections and some kind of relationship, I would say. So maybe they are very polite to me. But then at the same time, I think I don't feel they have any discrimination or kind of resistance of us coming into the UK. And I have to also thank the previous generation of Hong Kong immigrants into this country. They must have been very good citizens, law-abiding and also hardworking, and many of them are, their second generation are already professionals. They didn't give a bad impression to the local people here. So thanks to them, and now coming to here, we feel that we are at least not being resisted or kind of pushed back. I would say some of us, some of the local people are quite welcoming. But having said that, when you are going to kind of work here, got to join the job market, they would think that you are competing, and when you buy the properties, they think that you will be buying up the price. So I think that is natural, but at the same time, it is also reasonable for them to think that. So basically, I think for us, we come in here, create this, if we can create this new city, then we would like to create more jobs and more business opportunities, and at the same time some good contribution to this country, both economically and socially. And that's what we intend to do.
So let's talk about how far down the road you are at realizing this dream. What can you tell me about the stage at which you are, when will this start becoming a reality, if it does?
Well, we are now working on a proposal together with the Thames Freeport, and
is that a proposal to the central government?
I would say that at least to their board, then whether they will take it to the central government, I think most likely after the election, and we will be throwing all our weight behind this project and commit to this this project. And also, we are now in discussion with some major Taiwan manufacturers, and like semiconductor, AI, and also this cooling system for the data center, and also the energy storage, carbon capture, that sort of industries. So, and then the next thing will be talking to some Japanese conglomerate. And that's our plan.
So when you talk to these companies, are you telling them that can they benefit from the Freeport right now already?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Once they move in, they already can enjoy those incentives.
That's already happening.
Yeah, it's right. All set.
Right.
Yeah.
So your proposal is the creation of the city in a way to offer housing for them, as well as you know, everyone else, and you know, or, as well as the whole concept behind the free city.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what we will do is we will facilitate the land identification to identify the land, the also to help them to structure the deal, kind of how much investment they will make, and if they require additional funding, then where to get the extra capital, and also to help out the process. And if they want us to develop their factory for them or their housing for them, that would be perfect. And we are ready to do this. So we will work with these agencies like the Thames Freeport and also the Growth Board, and try to make this happen within their area, and at the same time help the manufacturers from Asia to kind of make a easy and educated decision, informed decision. And I hope that in the next 1 or 2 years, we can already get started. Right now, I don't think we are now trying to start from the early planning stage of a new city from scratch. In fact, as I said, there are already 636,000 people living there already, so they have a good population. But I noticed that the income and also the education level over there, they there's a kind of a poverty kind of situation. Some deprived or underprivileged people living there. So we hope that we can train up some of those people, and at the same time can bring in some good jobs for them to, yeah, for their future.
Do you think the talking about probably the application not going in until after the general election this year?
Yeah.
Do you think that the whoever gets in, do you think it's important? Because I'm just thinking that probably one side is probably more in favour of this kind of thing than the other. Is that fair to say? I don't know. I know that that's the case in Honduras right now.
Yeah.
You know, the right were into it and the left weren't. Is that the same here?
Well, it is very good that coming into the UK, we can talk politics freely. So I think the Labour Party, they have already, their shadow minister for housing has already announced a plan to kind of kickstart some new towns. And I like those ideas, because it's 50% affordable housing, and at the same time, they might touch on those grey belt area in nearby the green belt, and also the she has a very aggressive housing target. I think that is good, and we can easily work with them. But if the Tories they are still in the, win this election, then we are also kind of very very welcome to have their support, no matter which government, which party takes the ruling party status. We are ready to work with them. And I think in terms of the economic contribution to the country, I think this is going to be an exemplar in the future, where UK can have two or three more of this type, maybe one up north and one down south. Who knows? I mean,
well, it isn't in. I'm just trying to think of a historical precedent where a city was built around a free port in the UK, mm-hmm. or a free or an economic zone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's happened. Like Milton Keynes was just built.
It was just
build a city.
Yes.
Because it does make sense to build in special economic zones or free zones.
Yes.
I mean, we've just made a documentary about this, as you know well, you're in it. But it's kind of like a new idea, I think.
Yes.
But it makes much more sense when you think, okay, a special economic zone or a free port is specifically designed to attract business and to attract industry, say, or to attract, you know, corporations, whatever. So, and those workers do need to live somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I don't know what that area of Dagenham's like. I'm mm-hmm. guessing. Have you got a picture of it there?
Yeah.
I know that when you, because I'm from Kent, right? Uh-huh. I know that when you drive over the bridge,
uh-huh.
you know, over the...
Yeah.
When you look down the river...
You mean Dartford?
Dartford, yeah. Yep. The Dartford Bridge. When you look sort of like west back towards London...
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of flat land there, isn't there? A lot. And you can see that a lot of it is just nothing,
uh-huh.
or industrial or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I'm guessing that that's the place you're talking about, is it? That kind of, that, I mean, that big flat area of the Thames Estuary. Yeah.
Yes. In fact, last week I joined this Free Ride London. From London all the way riding bicycle to Essex and then come back for 100 miles. So
you did that?
Yeah, I did that.
What, 50 miles there and 50 miles back?
Yeah.
So you rode for a bike?
Yeah, yeah.
To Essex and back?
Yes, yes. I finished it in seven and a half hours. Well, that was very, very tiring and challenging, but I like it. And all along the way, I saw this beautiful scenery in Essex. And I think this got a lot of potential there. The land are relatively very flat, and at the same time, a lot of agriculture over there and natural environment. I'm not saying that we are going to develop those new city along this green area, but then it provides a very nice environment for people to relax, to kind of spend their leisure time and be part of this nature if they live there and work there. So I think this is very good. And coming back to the Freeport idea is also related to my background, because I was born in Hong Kong, and I describe myself as made in Hong Kong because I lived there for 61 years without leaving Hong Kong for more than a month. And so basically, I think what I observe the development of Hong Kong economically over the past few decades before I left 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, it was an entry port. It was a free port. So everything coming in, no tax at all, except cigarette and also this cosmetics, and wine. And other than that, no tax at all. Whether you come in or you go out, you just register your with the custom, then that's it. And so I see the benefit of being a free port. People would like to come here, do trading, manufacturing, and then got the least restrictions in terms of tariff. So I think, and over the past few years when we have this COVID, the Wuhan virus, and also the wars in Ukraine, the global supply chain was broken down. That makes the cost of living very high. And so I think, and at the same time, we found out that some countries, we just need some strategic supplies and we don't have. So I think having all these ideas coming together, I got this feeling that it has to be a free city where we have the free port status. And ideally, if it is a special economic zone, that's better, even much better. And at the same time, we need to address this kind of issues like the supply chain, and also the manufacturing, a port for people to trade, to, so the logistic, those are very crucial to a country. And
I think that one of the pitfalls of free zones that I've realized, mm-hmm. especially after making this documentary, is you have to be careful when you create a privileged area in a country, because it seems unfair on the other places that can't compete then.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be very careful that you're not out competing say Manchester or something like that, because it's not seen as the it's basically the government giving you a privilege to not tax people, say, mm-hmm. or to not put import taxes. Mm-hmm. And sure, that's going to attract a lot of people to you, but at the expense probably of other places. Mm-hmm. And that does seem like one of the secondary effects of these places.
Well, I think take Liverpool as an example. Before, it was also a very major harbour. Over there, a lot of trade with the rest of the world. But now that it changed, it has changed its role because of the change in the maritime. And for the Freeport, I think, yes, it does have some special advantage granted by the central government to attract more investment and trading, manufacturing into this area. But at the same time, it's not at the expense of others. On the opposite, is concentrating all this strength into one area so that more will come and then the rest of the region, at least nearby London and nearby area, even to the Midlands, they are benefited, and even to Kent, they can be benefited from this kind of advantage that the Freeport enjoys. So that's why the central government selected different areas in the in England to be Freeports, because of their location, and then because of the economy, it would bring a lot of economic benefits to the surrounding area. So,
do you know what what kind of businesses have they attracted so far? Then say the Dagenham Freeport.
Well,
are they working for these? Do you think they're working?
I am going to visit the Fort Dagenham Freeport in the next 2 weeks. But I've visited the DP World. They have already attracted a lot of major logistic companies. I have to find my photos there, because at that time I took some photos and found out that those are very kind of advanced logistic. I don't want to give you the wrong names, but then I've seen it, and this time they I visited them maybe a month ago, and they have already got very, very advanced operations over there in terms of automating all the handling of the cargoes and containers.
And your proposal is more of a kind of, for in the industry being quite tech centric, is it? Or
I would say the more advanced manufacturing and also tech, those would be the key. Because I think we would need to address to address the mission of making it a city for the future. So when we are talking about the future, we cannot talk about the art. So it has to be technology, it has to be manufacturing, and also, maybe we can have an AI center over there.
We went for the documentary we made. We visited a place called Masdar City.
Masdar City.
Do you know it? Near Abu Dhabi.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's a special economic zone, specifically targeted at technology. There's a university in there now. It's got, electric cars whizzing around everywhere. It's got, I see a lot of the similarities in what you're saying with a lot of projects that we visited in the UAE, actually.
Okay, yeah.
And they talk about clusters too.
Yeah.
Clusters of technology, of companies, whatever that is.
Yes.
Seems to be the model. But I like... I like the fact that you are trying to push the residential component to it as well.
Yeah. I think the residential component is a indispensable part of it. Without the residential, we are also creating all sorts of traveling the problems, killing time on the train, and also it would not be a kind of a full functional the integrated city. So I think the residential is a major part of it, but it would not be the leading elements. The leading element is still the industries.
Maybe it really is the future of new cities.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike we were talking about Milton Keynes, which was just built
mm-hmm.
as a way to house people.
Yeah.
I mean, but there was no, was there, I don't know this, I should look this up, but was there any business component to that decision to build Milton Keynes? Or was it that we need more houses? We're going to build a city. Let's just do it. There was no incentive for a business to move there, was there? I don't really know.
Okay. In fact, the idea is not totally new. Take Japan as an example. They have this Toyota, which developed a new city in the called Woven City.
Toyota?
Yeah, Toyota.
Yeah.
They have this Woven City by the Mount Fuji. And it's not a big area. It's just 173 acres of land. But then within that area, they have 2,000 Toyota employees living there. And all they committed to the electric car, electric vehicle, everything about this electric thing. And at the same time, the whole city has to experiment everything about the EV, and also the city is being powered by solar, by the hydrogen, and so I think this is also a city of the future. And the president of Toyota also proudly claimed that everyone living there are working for the future. And so I think that's very impressive. And what I'm trying to do is something similar to that. But my idea was not inspired from Woven City. But then there is already something happening in Japan.
Well, I mean, it's happened a few times, hasn't it? Motor companies as well. I think in America and Detroit, there have been similar projects.
Yes.
It's a concept that's been used mm-hmm. many times, but it's also a very functional one. I mean, if you do want to build a factory that manufactures something, I mean, if you look at even in the UK, uh-huh. if you go back to the Industrial Revolution, you see the same thing on a small scale. You come to South Wales where mm-hmm. in you'll see coal mines and then rows and rows of houses for the coal miners. It's yeah. similar concept.
I suppose. I think my the emphasis here is the future the future, the word future here, meaning that the city is to address the needs of the future of the humanity and also for the earth. So as you said, Milton Keynes was built as a new city without a theme. And I think for us, this 21st century free city in the Thames Estuary, we want it to be a city for the future. So that's basically that's the difference between Milton Keynes and also this new city.
Have you got a name for it yet?
No. That's too sensitive.
Oh, have you? Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But have you had any thoughts?
Maybe we should go for a naming competition.
I like
that. Let the public kind of come up with the ideas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's it currently called? The Freeport. What I mean, when you said there were three free ports there.
Yeah. One free port with three ports.
Oh, what's the one free port called?
They just call the Thames Free Port.
Thames Free Port.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds pretty good already.
Yeah.
Thames Free City.
Yeah. That's the name.
Yeah.
Thames Free Port.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, it's really, really interesting. Like I say, I'm impressed at your, how can I put it, imaginations. You really are thinking large. And it's a good idea, it has to be said as well. Because I can see, you know, like I say, having freshly come back from making a documentary all about free zones, economic zones.
Yes.
I can see that the zeitgeist, is what we would, you know what that means?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The zeitgeist at the moment, I think, is to expand the notion of free zones or of economic zones into places where people live as well as work. Because at the moment, they're either ports or they're logistics or they're tech hubs or whatever. But the residential element is kind of on the brink of coming in, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the major innovation that will happen from now on.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to attract people to go there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good enough to just attract the businesses, I think, especially if you're building a city from scratch.
Yes.
Because why would anyone want to go?
Yeah.
And where do they live as well? I mean, there may not even be a place to live.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Well, I think, you're right. And if we can have this kind of going alongside the residential, go alongside with the economic elements, I think it would make it very attractive in terms of both living and also kind of a lifestyle. And so I think this is a very unique kind of opportunity for us to do something meaningful, significant, and also forward-looking. Hopefully, we can bring the whole, the government or the society to think about the economic development in the future while at the same time taking care of the lifestyle, the choice of values, and the choice of the values and principle that you want to be associated with. So I think this is something that I don't know. I got the concept or the perception that doing smaller thing is maybe easier, but doing bigger thing, it might not be more difficult. So that's why I brought up this idea, and very luckily, I feel very grateful that they are receptive to this idea, and now we are working on a weekly basis and trying to make this happen as soon as possible.
Well, Ivan, thanks for bringing it to our attention. It's moved on a lot since the last time we spoke anyway. I mean, you were focused on the South Coast.
Yes.
Then. And I when I look at this plan now, I think this makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah, very much so.
Because the Freeport element is really important.
Yes.
Plus, I think actually that part of the Thames Estuary is a better location anyway.
Yes, better location.
Yeah, and the there's much more free land there as well, isn't it?
Yes, and I think it has already got the economic elements over there and the residential, the people, except that we have to kind of address the income difference and the education. So we bring in the these enterprises and also capital together with some good talents into this area. I think it would be a very good mix with the local business and local people. I pretty much look forward to this opportunity to work together with them and engage them and making it their projects instead of a project coming from outside.
Mm. Well, good luck with everything, and I'll expect another update in about 8 months' time, I suppose. And let's hope there's a lot to talk about then. But thanks for talking today.
Okay, thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Yes.